You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 149 of the Fanboy Garage. I hope everyone is doing well. Holy cow, what a week. Venom comes in and just demolishes the box office. What If demolishes our brains. There's so much more to look forward to. We've got Bond on the horizon, and just things are looking up. But let's start with the box office.
Okay. Yeah, you want to start with the box office, or do you want to just start with our thoughts?
We could start with Venom. It's all related.
Yeah, so let's start with that first, because I got to say, let's put Venom aside for 1 second. Prior to Venom, I saw what was quite possibly the weirdest trailer that I've ever seen for a movie in my life.
Was that the trailer
for Lamb?
Oh no, I'm sorry.
Okay, so I don't know. Maybe people got different trailers.
What trailer was it?
It's a movie called Lamb.
Lamb.
Yeah. Maybe people got different trailers depending on like the theater chains you went to or whatever. But words can't really even begin to describe this trailer.
Okay.
So I would just say, if you get a chance, just go. I'm sure it's on YouTube. Look it up because I'm not sure who the hell this movie is supposed to be for. Like, I'm sitting there watching this. First of all, I'm expecting it to be a parody. Like, I'm waiting for, it's some joke. But it's not. It's a serious thing. And, like, I'm sitting there saying, like, who is watching this going, yep, that's my movie. Like, this is the movie for me. I don't understand it. I guess the positive is that I will never forget this trailer, ever. Mm. And this is a movie that was not on my radar at all. I will never see this movie. Let's be clear about that.
It's a horror film? I'm just looking it up while you're speaking.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, okay. Apparently. It's
sure.
Naomi Rapace?
Yes. Yeah. Rapace, yes. I will never see this film, but I will never forget this trailer. it is whatever. I guess, what did it not play before your,
You know what? I was drinking before I went to go see Venom. Uh-huh. Kind of showed up a little late.
There you go. Good thing, because if you were drinking and then this trailer happened.
I walked in on the, I don't even remember what trailer I walked in on. It may have been Spider-Man, actually.
Okay, yeah, that was towards the end of the
trailer. Yeah, and then, and then there was that weird trailer that Nicole Kidman did about going back to the movie theaters.
Oh, well, you went to an AMC. I didn't get that because I was at a Regal, so we don't get that.
Horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's all get back to the theater, but I'm Nicole Kidman in an empty theater by myself watching a movie by myself, which is pretty much what I've been doing on the couch for a year and a half.
Yeah, I guess. Literally, I didn't see it.
You know, we're going to – amazing sound. And I'm like, I've got a Bose soundbar. I get amazing sound at home. You're not selling this to me.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So
– I'm going to have to check out this trailer now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, before we get into it, just a quick little news item for folks. We're going to have a special guest on next week's episode. Sean from the Sean Geek Podcast is joining us. And you cannot expect us to get into spoilers right now for Venom, Let There Be Carnage. We will give you a sort of broad sweep of how we feel. But we'll get into spoilers with Sean and a whole bunch of other things. So stay tuned for next week's episode where we'll have a special guest. It'll be our first guest in quite a while since our good friend Ryan Airy.
Yeah.
Sean will be our special guest for next week's episode. We'll be able to just blow the lid off of our feelings for Venom in spoilerific Marvel
Yeah, I mean, it's because it's a little early still. It's for opening weekend, obviously, and this episode will be dropping on, like, you know, very late Sunday, early Monday. So it's just past the opening weekend. So
And look, you know, pandemic has got people feeling all sorts of different things. So get there when you get there to the theaters. Check it out. If you didn't, then skip over our episode. But we won't get into spoiler territory today.
On this episode. Yeah. So, okay. So I'm just going to give, and we're going to talk a lot about the box office performance because that is certainly newsworthy. But I guess just to cover some broad thoughts on this movie, my initial reaction to it was, wow, what was that?
Okay.
Yeah. I can't say I liked this movie, although it's not – my feelings for this were much different than for the first Venom, because the first movie I was like, well, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It's kind of there. For what it is, like, it was just like, okay, it happened. It's fine. Like, and I moved on with my life. Like, there were good things that I liked about it, things that I didn't. But, like, I didn't have, like, a big reaction either way to it. This movie, there were still some things that I liked about it, but there was a period where, and now, mind you, this movie is an hour and 35 minutes long.
I was about to say, it's only 90 minutes.
And there was a period where I almost reached for my phone to check the clock, which I normally only do for, like, longer movies, and because I was just like, I want this movie to be over, I want to go home. Like, I'm not enjoying it. Like, I'm not hating it, but, like, I'm not enjoying it.
Okay.
And then, like, the third act, you know, was kind of cool, right? Because it's big and there's a lot of action and stuff. But, like, yeah, I mean, so I don't know.
And you went, just for context.
Yeah.
You went to the theater early in the day, right?
I did. It was the first showing on Saturday morning.
Okay. And you had your breakfast.
Yes.
You were awake.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm asking that because I had a similar experience, and I had a rough Friday, and I went for a 9 p.m. show, and I was tired. Like I said, I was drinking, not a lot, but drinking a glass of wine, and I was tired. And in the second act, I looked at my watch two or three times and said, damn, I got 30 minutes left of this. And I'm in the same boat as you. I think there were some things I liked. I'm able now to pinpoint the thing that I liked about the first Venom.
Yes, I feel
the same
way.
A lot of it in this, in this, and it's the dynamic between Eddie Brock and Venom.
Absolutely. Well, that was by far the best. The two things that I liked best about the first movie was that, and I guess this is somewhat related, was also the fact that Tom Hardy, while he was over the top, he seemed very invested in it. Like, he believed in this. He was giving it his all, and he just, and that is still kind of a thing. Although I feel like overall, everybody is just overacting the crap out of this movie.
Yeah, and the one thing that I got distracted about, there's a couple of things I was, like, super distracted about. But the biggest thing related to the movie, because there's some external factors and then there's the movie, it's how much Venom sounds like Bane.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Really?
It was like, it started to eat at me a little bit while I was listening to Venom talk. There were certain things that he was saying. I'm like, that's totally Tom Hardy voicing.
Well, yeah.
Bane voicing Venom. Huh. So there were a couple of lines I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
You need to stop that. But
now I probably won't be able to unhear that. Thanks.
Yeah, definitely give that a listen. Yeah. And then there were some things that were just absolute wastes in my mind. Like, and this is all opinion, right? We're not getting into spoiler territory.
Sure.
It's all subjective. You know, whoever's listening to you may have had the best time at the movie theaters ever. Good for you.
Sure.
Happy. I was like, first part of the movie, I was like in it, because I was like, oh, this is gonna be like, you know, Eddie trying to keep on pushing back Venom's hunger and all, you know, eventually they're going to get into this like lethal protector thing. But then when it became like a, I don't know, like the tip of the hat, like we're going to say lethal protector like three or four times.
Yeah. They really drove that home. Yeah.
I was like, meh.
Yeah.
I was bored. I was bored, Frank. That's what it was.
You know, so I'll just give a quick rundown of the things that I liked and the things that I didn't, right? Just to make it easy. So obviously, like I said, I still like the interaction between Eddie and Venom. It's cool. It does get into some slapstick territory, but you know what? I'm kind of okay with that because, like, as a fan of, like, Evil Dead, the Evil Dead series, like, yeah. it had, like, an Evil Dead 2 vibe in that. Like, I know that there are fans of that franchise that think, like, Evil Dead 2, and especially Army of Darkness, but, like, Evil Dead 2 got too slapsticky, like, Three Stooges-esque. And this movie doesn't quite get there, but there were not, like, things in my mind that kind of, like, the way they were going back and forth and the fighting, so that it reminded me of like a Bruce Campbell type performance. So I'm okay with that stuff. Plus, I also feel like if you're going to have Venom be a hero, I say hero specifically because I keep seeing everyone say, well, he's an anti-hero. In this movie, he is very much a hero.
Yeah.
Right? He is no longer an anti. In the first movie, that he was an anti-hero because it was this like evil alien thing, mm-hmm, and he was kept in check, sort of balanced out by Eddie.
No.
And there was that yin and yang. In this movie, when we first are reintroduced to them, he's bought into the program completely.
Yeah, he expresses a desire to be a hero.
Yeah, like he only wants to eat the bad guys, right? Yeah. He doesn't want to eat the chickens because he said they're family.
Easy. Spoiler.
Huh?
Spoiler.
Oh, well, all right. I guess technically, yeah, that's a spoiler. But, okay, so anyway, he's kind of bought into the concept of being a hero. And even later on in the movie, it's really driven home,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
That he's... So, like, I get that you need to... That's a way to do it, was to really have that comedy and that back and forth. So that was okay. The special effects towards the end, like the big CGI fights and stuff like that, that was cool.
It's gotten better.
Yeah, it's gotten better, no doubt. So here's what I didn't like about it. Any of the acting. And it's funny because and we'll talk about this a little later. I just finished a Daniel Craig Bond rewatch. And I just watched Naomi Harris in Skyfall and Spectre, and she's really good.
Yeah.
And she's terrible in this movie.
She's
not just
a waste.
I thought she was awful.
Yeah.
I thought her character was terrible. I thought, like, the voice that she used was annoying and grating. Like, I didn't like anything about her. And Woody Harrelson, to me, was the biggest disappointment in this entire movie because he's great. And I just felt like he was playing a parody of his character from Natural Born Killers in this entire movie. Like, he was trying too hard to, like, be... And I understand that the character's like a murderer and all that stuff, but, like, he was trying too hard to be a parody. Like, there was no nuance or depth at all to, like, that character.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, so Tom Hardy, like, he's overacting. Everybody's overacting. Yeah, like that. So that kind of caught me off guard. And the other thing was I thought we would get a little bit more of some just... I thought they would spend a little bit more time, even with the limited runtime, developing Cletus and Carnage a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And that was severely lacking to me because, like, one of my big pet peeves, and I've mentioned this before on the show, when I watch a movie is when there is... You set up a motivation for a character, right? And there are these important character beats. And instead of actually showing them to me, you tell me about them. Like, we're supposed to, like, just accept the fact that Eddie and Cletus have developed some kind of bond.
Yeah.
Like Silence of the Lambs-esque type bond. But, like, we don't see it. Like, it happens sometime between the post-credit scene or mid-credit scene in the first movie and the beginning of this movie. And, like, we know that he wrote an article because we see it. Right, like Francis is reading it, and they reference like this weird relationship or bond and stuff like that, but like we don't actually see it, and that's kind of a major element to the plot and the motivation of this movie, and we don't see it. The romance between Francis and Cletus, again, we see the little thing, you know, we see elements of it and stuff, but like it doesn't really develop.
Yeah.
Like it's just a thing. Like they tell us about a lot of stuff. So it's like I found myself not invested at all in any of that, in any of the characters. And I feel like, you know, one of the weaknesses of the first movie was the villain, right? The Riz Ahmed kid was underwritten.
Right.
Well,
right.
They underwrote this character too.
Yeah. All
like,
of them.
Like this really. Movie could have actually benefited from another 15 to 20 minutes. I think. I mean, depending on how they went about it. I still probably
would have been spent with like just goo versus goo.
Well, no, I don't. Well, I mean, not that. I mean, like a 15, 20 minutes of just like maybe showing us a little bit more of like Eddie and Cletus and all of that stuff. And mm-hmm. Cletus, give us a little bit more backstory. Show us a little bit more about him and
yeah,
who
they did
and
it. Well, I'm not going to tell you how they did his right. backstory, which
right.
was very Joker-esque, I would say.
Yeah, so
you can't trust the narrator of the story.
Right. So I anyway, so there was a bunch of stuff I didn't like. I could get how people could like it because you know, you got the big fight stuff at the end and ultimately, like, if you'd want to treat this like a monster movie or a Godzilla movie where like the main event is basically you want to just see the monsters fighting and then cool, that's what you got.
Yeah.
And I get it. Interestingly enough, and I'm not gonna, we won't get into the spoilers here or whatever, but interestingly enough, in the theater that I was in, and I think this might speak to something, and what this will tie into, I think, when we start talking about the box office and the word of mouth, the audience reactions. In the theater that I was in, people were not reacting at all to the movie. At all.
Yeah.
There may be
that
a couple
so
of.
Funny you said that because that was the same.
Yeah.
That's the same.
Reaction.
React. Well, not reaction.
Or non reaction.
Impression I got.
Yeah. There are a couple of chuckles, you know, here or there.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, nothing. And
yeah.
then during the post credit scene, everybody was like hooting and hollering and cheering
yeah.
and like, yeah, let's go, let's bring it on. Like, so I could see how like somebody might leave that theater and you hand them a cinema score card and like, yeah, they're like, yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Because it's like the last thing that you remember. But, and this, most of this movie is so disposable that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to me, I saw people sneaking in. People were sneaking in at the end of the movie.
Oh, just to see that.
Just
yeah.
to see the post credits.
Yeah.
There was like a bunch of people that came in just to see that. And now I'm thoroughly convinced that the leak that happened a couple weeks back was intentional. Like, I don't know why, but that's where my gut tells me, like, as a PR person, that was an intentional move on the studio's part.
I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
You know?
I for me, there were like, first of all, I should say that my movie theater experience was not the best.
Uh-oh.
Like I was uncomfortable. Too many people. It's a reserve seating and I picked the seat and
right.
it was just me and I ended up in a seat that, you know, if you lift up that arm bar, you're basically cuddling with somebody.
Oh, the love seat. Yeah, like the recliner.
That's what I was in and it was a big dude. So every time he moved, that arm ball, that arm thing moved with him, and he got up to go to the bathroom like three times, and I was just uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I couldn't stop. I had a mask on the entire time. I felt uncomfortable, you know, just being there with all those people, and then it wasn't an enjoyable experience because to your point, there was no reaction. There was no excitement, you know. There was a couple of chuckles, but it was kind of like, oh, you know, great, fine. And again, for the most part, I was like, okay, 90 minutes is feeling awfully long now.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, I caught myself just staring, you know, like just not even really understanding what I was watching. Just kind of just okay.
Yeah.
Here we are. And then I stuck it out for the post credit scene and to, you know, again, everyone, yeah, you know, getting all crazy about it. but it was forgetful. I walked out and I was like, well, that was kind of like...
It's disposable. Yeah, and it's, you know, I had the pleasure actually of having a very lightly attended theater, that auditorium that day, partly because in my desire to get the earliest show, I wound up paying for the RPX, which is like Regal's kind of version of IMAX. It's like their premium format.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger auditorium, obviously bigger screen, and a few dollars more expensive. So it was not as packed as like Shang-Chi was. So I had that going for me. And to be honest with you, I mean, this was the type of movie you actually, if you are going to see it, it's not bad to see it in this premium format anyway, because it's big, right? It's a big special effects movie. So I was okay with all that. But yeah, I mean, it was mostly, you know, just kind of disposable. I have almost a similar reaction to the first movie in that, but different in a way. Like the first movie, like I said, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But I was just kind of like, okay, whatever. You know, there's some good stuff here. There's some stuff they could have done different, but it's fine. In this movie, it was like I didn't love it. I didn't hate it, but I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of my lasting impression is more like I didn't really like this. I don't know that this is the type of movie that I'll probably watch.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, you know, maybe if it's on one day, like I'm not gonna turn it off. But like, you know, so it's just kind of like whatever. So it skews to me. Kind of the opposite of what the critics' reviews have been, which have been slightly more positive for this than for the first movie. Although I did read some of the negative reviews because they were all very similar, and it is interesting. Right. They're like, this is one of the best casts like that you could have wasted like in a movie like this. Like when you really think about it, you got Tom Hardy, you got Woody Harrelson, Naomi Harris, Michelle Williams, like all these great actors. And, like, this is the movie that they're in. Like,
yeah. I mean, Michelle Williams, they could have recast her. I wouldn't have known. You know what I mean? Like,
correct. Yeah.
No big deal there. Naomi Harris, like you said, was just a total waste. Total waste.
Yeah.
The moment – I haven't been paying very close attention to who was in this movie. And I looked at her, and I was like, is that Naomi Harris? And then when she was, like, veiled –
yeah.
I'm sorry. That's sort of a spoiler, but she covers her face, and I'm like, oh, that's Tia Dalma from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, that's right. She was in that. It's true, yeah.
Looked just like, I mean, you basically just ripped her out of that movie and threw her in this one.
Yeah, it's – I feel like that character's had, like, really – one purpose, and I guess we'll talk more about it.
And it's a waste.
Yeah,
I
mean, when we get into the spoiler stuff next episode. But yeah, it was. Yeah, whatever. I mean, look, it's, I guess, you know, it's to be expected when the movie's an hour and 35 minutes. Like, I did not expect deep plot, but I honestly did expect a little bit more character development with the villain because we had already gotten the Venom stuff in the first movie. And it was like, I figured this movie would devote a little bit more of its time to establishing a villain for us. It is what it is. I mean, we'll talk more about it next episode when we can get into the spoilers. Because there's Easter eggs and character drops and all kinds of stuff that we could get into about it and geek about it. But the big...
It was funny. I saw it by myself and I... Jess, my wife, was sleeping when I got home and I crept in bed. She was like, how was the movie? And I was like, She's like, are you all right? And I'm like... She's like, so how was the movie? And I was like, She's like, oh, do you have indigestion? I'm like, I can't tell. It was boring.
Yeah, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyways.
The big story, though, of this weekend was the box office performance, which I would have to categorize as startling. So just for some context, the pre-release projections from the studio, which admittedly are usually on the conservative side, was $40 million. Okay, going into the weekend. You know, the box office prognosticators, most of them, were all projecting around 55 to 65 million. And I remember last week I had mentioned that if it did those numbers, they should be doing cartwheels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it did $90.1 million in its opening weekend. And that is the biggest opening of the pandemic era. It is also the second biggest October opening of all time behind Joker, which did $96.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it's $10 million more than the first Venom movie did in its opening weekend domestically, right? That did $80 million 3 years ago. I mean, that first movie was a startling hit, right? $856 million worldwide.
Right, right.
And which nobody expected. And it had really strong legs to it. So the word of mouth on that movie, for a movie that didn't get very good reviews at all, it held up, and it's really interesting to see that this movie now blows past it. I mean, it's so unusual to have sequels outperform their predecessors in mm-hmm. any era. Forget about the pandemic era. Right, so for it to do that in this pandemic era is even more incredible. Mm. It looks like this movie really worked because it was the perfect storm of appealing to the audience that is going to the theaters in the biggest numbers right now, which mm-hmm. are men between the ages of 18 and 34.
Yeah.
That is who's going to the theaters based on all the demographic tracking, you're seeing from a lot of these movies. And that might explain a lot when you're trying to figure out why some movies do well, some movies don't. I don't know. But that's the audience that's right now has very little apprehension about going to theaters. And this movie appeals big time to that. I mean, if you look at the numbers, just a demographic breakdown, 57% of the audience, 67% of the audience was men. And 57% of the audience was between 18 and 34.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's huge numbers. Now, the movie did not open. It only opened in two additional markets internationally, Russia and Ukraine. And I know in Russia, it broke like all kinds of box office records. So that probably bodes well. But next weekend is when it opens up in a lot of the international markets because when they made the shift from October 15th back to October 1st,
right.
they didn't adjust the overseas numbers. Now, interestingly enough, there is not a release date right now in China. So the movie will be released in China because they have marketed it heavily in China. And it was, I think, supposed to come out September 14th back when this was a September release.
Right.
When they shifted it to October, they never adjusted the China release date. And I think part of that reason is because October 22nd, Dune opens in China, and October 29th, No Time to Die opens in China. So I don't know when it's going to open in China, but it's important because the first Venom movie did $269 million in China, which is $55 million more than it did in North America.
Right.
So that's a major market.
Those international numbers.
And this is the type of movie that I think would do big numbers in China, right? Mm. So we'll see. I mean, who knows when that's going to, if it's going to maybe November or whatever. But so, I mean, right now they're saying that, this thing could do well over $700 million worldwide. I mean, they're still not projecting it to beat it overseas to beat the numbers that the first movie did. But they are expecting it to wind up somewhere around where the first movie was domestically. It's a little tough because, next week you got No Time to Die opening, which is going to take away a lot of the premium format screens from this. I mean, I know personally, like the auditorium that I was in for Venom next week is shifting to Bond. Okay, because I got my tickets for that. So, that's going to be happening next week in a lot of theaters. So it's going to lose a lot of its premium format screens, so which cuts into the money that it makes. But the word of mouth metrics are strong for this. I mean, it got the same cinema score as the first movie, B+, Right now, it's got an 85% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's got a 76% positive on Post Track. Like, kids are, like, loving this. Mm. If you look at the Post Track number, like, 88% of kids under 12, like, said that they love, like, were positive. That was the highest positivity rate.
And it's rated R. And which, that's...
And I didn't have any kids in my screening. Personally,
there were some like kid, like maybe like 10.
Yeah, I didn't have anyone like that looked like they were under like maybe 17 or 18. Mm. But yeah, so the word of mouth metrics are strong. I mean, it's word of mouth similar to the first movie, maybe a little bit skewing a little bit more positive, but it's also they're getting. You know, one of the things that's happening right now is that you're getting less responses, right? Like, there's mm-hmm. less reviews, there's less critics' reviews, less audience reviews and stuff like that because of, you know, the pandemic, I guess. So, plus I think people, for the most part, are getting a little tired of all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But based on that, you would think that this thing should hold up fairly well. But if you would have told me that Venom would be, like, the first movie to break, like, 90 million... You know, in this pandemic era, I wouldn't have had that one picked. I would have thought it would have taken probably till, like, Spider-Man.
Nah, I mean, maybe. I feel like the hype for Venom was strong.
Oh, it was, but I didn't think 90 million strong, like that, like surpass the original, surpass everything that's come out. You know, like,
yes.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, even they weren't expecting it. Like, even the studios, like, when the numbers came out for Friday, like, the projections were bumped up to, like, 70, maybe 75 million. This mm-hmm. is just another one of those movies. I mean, the same thing kind of happened with Shang-Chi, where it kept, you know, outperforming the estimates every day. So, like, that's another trend that we've been seeing so far, is that these movies are outperforming the trends. They're outperforming the estimates on Sundays, Saturdays and Sundays. Hmm. So that's interesting too. I guess, yeah, I mean, it just people are back in business. I mean, I know for me personally, I didn't have this feeling with Shang-Chi because it was my first time back.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, for some reason, like when I was at the concession stand, I had like a moment, like when the guy put the popcorn on the counter. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I love going to the movies.
Mm.
Like, I just had this kind of, like, moment. Like, yeah, this is cool. I mean, you know, negative things aside. I mean, I'm sure, you know, all it's going to take is, you know, give me one movie where, like, I have an annoying audience or something like that, and then it goes out the window. But, like, I tend to go at times and on days when I can avoid a lot of that. So right. I've been able to thankfully avoid... for many years, any of those types of issues. Yeah, I mean, for movies that are worth it and movies that are marketed well and generate a buzz, like, clearly, I don't think we can blame, at least here, domestically, we can blame the pandemic anymore on movies' poor performances.
No.
You know, I mean, yeah, day and date releases and stuff like that throws... like a monkey wrench in the works for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the Many Saints of Newark.
Right. Although, you know, I think with Many Saints of Newark, I don't think that has as much to do with the fact of the day and date release as it is the fact that The Sopranos is a television property.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people are just, that's how they watched it. They think of it as a television show. And I think that the fact that they could watch it on HBO, like, that's where they watched The Sopranos.
Right.
Like, I don't know that... I mean, if you look at the history of movies based on, like, successful television shows or that were... And I'm not talking about, like, reinterpretations, you know, or remakes or movies bait. Like, I'm talking about, like, where they're either... Well, no, like, meaning where, like, yeah, like, to start... Where they're continuing the story, mm-hmm. right? So, for mm-hmm. instance, like, a Serenity, right, which was the movie... that followed up Firefly, which was a show mm-hmm. that was canceled. that movie did not perform well, right? And they thought it might because the show was, they had this letter writing campaign and like they'd, the DVDs sold a ton or whatever. Like Sopranos is another thing. I mean, I think one, it's been a long time since the Sopranos were on. And I think the audience for the Sopranos is outside of the demographic of the people that are going to theaters right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think that was a movie that was really going to... And honestly, I don't think the marketing for that was particularly good at all anyway.
No.
Like, I just, like, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
I just started it. It's a slow burn.
I would assume,
it's a very, very, very
slow
burn.
I would assume it would be. But even within Day and Date, there are still levels of, like... You know, again, like a movie like The Suicide Squad had the Day and Date, and I'm sure that affected it, but like it tanked to a level that you can't just blame Day and Date.
Right.
There was more to that failing, right? It was just not a movie that people wanted to see in theaters or whatever, or at all. You know, because even like Black Widow, Black Widow's Day and Date was a premium price, I get it. But like Godzilla versus Kong did fairly well at the box office, even though it was Day and Date and it released much earlier, you know, mm-hmm. during when the pandemic was kind of still raging and stuff. So like, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I know Ron Diesel had asked us a question, he said, due to the box office reactions, which he asked this question actually after the Friday numbers came out. Mm-hmm. But so it's even more relevant now. He said, is this a case of audiences that saw the first movie, speaking of Venom, of course, enjoyed it enough to not worry about what the critics say about the sequel and went to the theaters to check the movie out? Yes. I mean, I think yes and no. I know that's a terrible answer. But I think yes, people who saw the first movie made a decision based on that, whether they were going to see this or not. But I don't think the critics were going to sway that either way. Plus, this movie's gotten better reviews than the first movie somehow. In a smaller sample size, but like, I know I was looking through it and I know like the Rotten Tomatoes scores are a little tough to compare because you're talking about like 150 reviews versus like 350 reviews. So the fact that this movie is a 59% on Rotten Tomatoes versus the 30% the first movie did is a little tough because it's more than less than half the amount of reviews. But I still don't think that if it was apples to apples, you would have gotten down to 30% from 59%. But Metacritic, I think, is a fairer comparison because it's a lot closer. So Metacritic for this movie, it's a 47 based on 37 reviews, which they consider mixed or average reviews. And for the first Venom movie, it did a 35 based on 46 reviews, which they consider generally unfavorable reviews. So, you know, the critics' scores are actually skewing slightly more or more positive for this movie than for the first one. And the audience, I don't think this is a case at all of people saying specifically for this movie, critics be damned, I'm going to go see it anyway. I just think that overall, I don't think critics matter that much anymore. And I don't think they have for a while. You know, there was a time where movie critics and film criticism played a very big role in the marketing of a film. You know, like back in the Siskel and Ebert days, like if a movie got that two thumbs up, like that was a huge stamp of approval. And they made sure they put that on the poster as big as possible in like a prime spot. Because, you know, there was a time where that's how people knew that movies were coming out. Like you walked by and you saw a poster or you saw an ad in the newspaper or you saw Siskel and Ebert reviewing it or your local film critic on your local TV news station. Like, or in your newspaper. Like, that was how people found out about movies. Those days are long gone. You know, I mean, so now marketing isn't geared towards criticism. It's just about getting your content out there. You know, like this stuff, the trailers, the 10 different trailers, TV spots, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of different things on social media. Like, you don't need critics anymore. Like, people just, I don't think they care. And I don't think they ever really did, to be honest with you. I mean, there have been movies that have not been critically acclaimed that have made a lot of money.
Right.
Forever, right? It's not something that's a new phenomenon.
It's just the swing pendulum of trust.
Yeah.
Like, you trust your like-minded individuals and friends more than you would trust an outsider who you don't know from Adam, so...
Yeah, well, that's true. Word of mouth is the biggest marketing tool that these movies have. It's been we've seen it over and over again. I mean, I used the example of the Matrix trilogy, right, when we were talking about this on the show, and how if you look at that trajectory, you know, the first movie, surprise hit, word of mouth is obviously through the roof. Second movie does much bigger box office. Word of mouth on that, not great. Third movie does even less than the first movie did. Like, that's just a perfect example of how word of mouth affects movies. And just because, you know, critics don't like a movie. I mean, look, the Transformers movies, not, you know, minus the Michael Bay Transformers movies. The critics hated those movies. They made a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, this isn't like a new phenomenon, right? That, you know, critics don't like movies that are successful. In fact, there was a time when people used to complain many, many years ago that, like, oh, critics only like these artsy movies that, like, get nominated for awards, but they don't like any movies that make money, right? Because it was deemed like, oh, that, you know, like, that elitism, right? Like, oh, these are just commercial. This is just commercial trash. So, like, a lot of, like, established property movies or movies based on TV shows or things like that when they didn't get great reviews. So, yeah, I mean, you know, no, I don't think it is. I just think people want to see what they want to see.
Right.
I don't think it's new. I think
the timing is perfect.
That too. Yeah.
Timing is perfect. There are people who have been, you know, locked up, and I'll tell you, man, like, and now, granted, I went at different times. My experience in the theaters for Shang-Chi was radically different. But, like, I walked in at 9 p.m., and my theater was bumping. Like, there was a line for the bar.
Oh, Shang-Chi. Yeah, I had the same experience.
For concessions. I was like, yeah. I walked in there. I was like, man, this movie's gonna crush it this weekend.
Yeah.
I walked into the theater, and it was, like, people everywhere. And, I wasn't, you know.
And that's why I think I was a little even more surprised by this box office, because I kind of had the same deal. Like, I went to see a little earlier than Shang-Chi, but only by, like, maybe 20 minutes, right?
Right.
Or half hour. So it wasn't like it was, like, hours apart. And the day was different. I went to see Shang-Chi on Friday as opposed to this one on a Saturday. But, like, when I pulled into the parking lot, so they have, like, a big parking lot, like, on a roof.
Mm-hmm.
It was empty. And when I say empty, I mean empty. I was the only car in this giant parking lot.
Wow.
Okay. And so I get out and I go downstairs and, like, yeah, there was a little bit of a line for Shang-Chi getting, like, for the people, you know, here in New York that have to show, like, vaccination cards and IDs and stuff. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Nobody in the theater. Nobody online at the concession stand. Yeah. In my auditorium, like I said, it was very lightly attended. And then when I left, like, coming out of the theater, like, there were maybe a handful of cars. So it wasn't like, you know, oh, well, maybe they're coming for the next show. Like, right. No, like, there weren't that many cars. So I was like, oh, okay, this is very different. And then you see these box office numbers and you're like, wow, what happened? Like, yeah. It's weird. Like, if you would have just taken a poll for me based on my theater experience, I would have been like, yeah, this movie probably will make less than Shang-Chi.
That's so funny. It's so funny. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, matinees is where it's at for me then. That's because I'll tell you, man, my anxiety was, like, through the roof in that incident when I was like, I literally walked in the theater, like, holy shit, there's, like, a party of people happening right now.
Yeah.
Bars bump. I was like, I was thinking about, oh, you know, I'm at this point now where I'm like, after I saw Shang-Chi, I was like, I'll just roll into the theater.
Well, when, like, did you, was it like around the same time?
No. Shang-Chi was so different. Shang-Chi, no. I went in the afternoon.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
It was different. No, like, there were people to see Shang-Chi, but it was like,
Yeah.
A 9 p.m. Like, but here's the thing. I've driven past my theater at around that time, and it wasn't like this before. Like, it was, like, there were people, like, out and about. Like,
yeah.
This is, like, I'm talking pre-pandemic type stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, like, for personally, that's what got me super anxious, because I was like, oh my God, is everyone just throwing caution to the wind here? I'm just being, like, super sensitive.
It's really, it's weird. It's, I mean, but I guess the bottom line is Venom has now been established as a legit big time box office problem.
Sure. I mean, it's making Sony super, super happy. And, yeah. And, you know, they've got Morbius, which got pushed. I'm sure they're super excited now. I think, you know, Morbius was supposed to come out before Venom.
Yes.
Right? Look, they are in – they're going to be very surprised, but I think, by the reaction they're going to get from Morbius.
Who Sony is?
Yeah.
In what way?
I think this is going to –
like,
is
people won't care?
Paving the way for them.
You think surprise
Morbius,
meaning
Morbius
people
– wouldn't have made any money.
Yeah.
Before Venom.
Right.
But Venom opened some serious doors for Morbius.
I mean,
and I'm
going to
leave it at that.
Yeah. You would think that they're going to do as much as they can in their marketing to link the movies.
Play it up. They're
because
play
that's
it up.
The whole reason why you would create a shared universe, right?
Sure.
Is to synergy.
Yeah, but yes. Yes, but yeah. Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought, right, that this Venom property would turn into this? I mean, you know, kudos to Sony. Look, regardless of what you think of the quality of the movies, they have caught the attention of the movie-going public. And with a character that is...
A character that doesn't have a Spider-Man.
Correct. But clearly is popular enough on their own.
Yeah.
Because of the association with Spider-Man, right? Because of how iconic that Venom became because of Spider-Man. Like, they were able to utilize that. Now, Morbius is a different story. Doesn't quite have that connection, right? Mm-hmm. Is not iconic like that. But they now at least, they don't have to rely on Spider-Man for Morbius to be popular. They can link Venom now because they have their own established star. And
I say yes and no. We'll get into that next week.
Well, good for them. Good for Sony, right? Because, you know, whatever.
Sure. Yeah, whatever. I mean, look, and I just tweeted at a friend, Dave Gonzalez, who he's a lifelong Spider-Man fan, and he tweeted he's deeply concerned for Spider-Man. And I get where he's coming
for
from.
For the movie? For No Way Home?
The character and, like, what, you
got
know.
It.
What it means.
Uh-huh.
And we'll get into that next week because I share his feelings.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah. So
Venom. Well, let's see how it does in week two.
Week two. I mean, again, it's going up against Bond. So, you know, it'll have some competition. We'll see. So that'll actually be an interesting thing because it'll add a little wrinkle, right, to... Not only is it going to need to have legs, but it's going to need to have legs and fend off competition... Slightly different audiences, but still, it's going to lose.
But it's that's that group of people, man.
Yes.
I mean, I could see Bond appealing to that, what, 18 to 34, you said?
Sure. 18, 100%. Particularly males, 18 to 34 right now, are the primary audience that has flocked back to theaters in bigger numbers.
Yeah, now this is going to pull an older generation, I'd imagine, as well, because shit.
Yeah.
It's been Bond since 2005.
What's the, oh, for Craig, yeah. 6, I think, 2006.
Yeah.
Yeah. And interestingly, because I am now super pumped for this movie. Like, I think it was last week, right? We talked about how, like, I haven't seen a lot of Bond films in the theaters, but I've seen them all. Well, I don't know what happened to me. Like, something happened where, like, midweek, I just was like, I'm getting pumped for this Bond movie.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know what? I'm going to do a Daniel Craig Bond rewatch. leading up to this, because at that point I had decided I'm going to see No Time to Die in theaters. So let me do a Daniel Craig Bond rewatch over a couple of day period of time. And I did that. And I'm really glad I did for a couple of reasons. And the primary one is because, you know, one of the things that I really love about this Craig, what they call the Craig continuity now, right, this Craig series, is the fact that it kind of is its own thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they basically rebooted the franchise with Casino Royale. They kind of went back to the beginning. And, like, you can watch these Daniel Craig movies on their own without having seen James Bond before, right?
Right.
Or know anything. And it's so it's that part about it is really cool. And there's also a continuity, which is also cool.
His motivations.
Yeah. And I know that there are some critics and stuff that have issues with that, because I don't know why, but they do. They feel like that's took some of the series down a little bit, but whatever. That's critics.
Yeah. No.
For me, I have to say that there were certain things that surprised me in rewatching these and certain things that kind of didn't, right? So just looking through. So for me, Casino Royale is still the gold standard.
So good.
That movie is just a classic.
The movie is so good.
Yeah. Everything about it, from the black and white opening to just everything about that movie is just so spot on perfect that nothing changed for me there.
I think for me, the main reason why I absolutely adore it is the quintessential redefining of Bond.
Yeah.
I mean, that torture scene where I'll never forget this shit, because it was my dad and I used to watch Bond. Like, we'd go to the theaters all the time watching. We were both sitting there next to each other, and Lachif gets the rope going and whap on his nuts, and my dad and I grab each other's legs.
Yeah, that's not fun.
He's just like,
And
then he's like, oh, I've got an itch. He's a little more to the left.
Yeah.
Like, when would you have ever heard that in a Bond movie? I don't know what I mean, especially with his nuts.
I mean, when you say it's a complete reinterpretation of the character, I mean, it in every way. It's a physical reinterpretation of the character. It's an emotional reinterpretation of the character, stylistic reinterpretation of the character. You know, even and just the way they decided to the narrative that they used.
Yeah.
Establish relationships. The relationship with Judi Dench is M, which plays an enormous role, right, in this series. And the depth that they... Because she was M in the Pierce Brosnan movies.
Right.
But this is like a... Even though it's the same actress, I mean, she's obviously playing a different M.
It's Alfred. But yeah. Not.
It's... Yeah, I mean, this is... gets wonky, but I mean, it's she's playing a different M, and they established this incredible relation, and their chemistry was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and I love the Chris Cornell song that starts it. All of that. Love all of the just fantastic. Now, this was the surprise for me, was Quantum of Solace, which has always been a movie that I've kind of been like, whatever. Like, that was kind of pedestrian or whatever. But, like, rewatching it, I really enjoyed Quantum of Solace on rewatch. And I think the biggest reason for that is because it really benefits from watching it back-to-back with Casino Royale. Back-to-back,
yeah,
because
it picks right up.
Yeah, it is the first, true sequel continuation that you've ever gotten in the Bond franchise. It's 10 minutes after the ending of Casino Royale.
Yeah, where he grabs Mr. White.
Yeah, and it's a continuation of the themes from that movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bond's journey. And yes, I understand what people say where it's kind of like, it's not. It's more Bourne than Bond. Okay, yeah, it's an action movie, right? It's not a spy movie. And it's different for a Bond film, no doubt. It's the shortest Bond film. It's an hour and 45 minutes. Part of that is because there was a writer's strike.
That's right.
So they had to rush to finish the script. And Daniel Craig doesn't say much in the movie, but man, the action in that is unbelievable. The action Now, it's not edited that great, but it's a little choppy, but the action and the fight choreography is badass in Quantum of Solace. The villain is okay, right? It's not the best villain, so I'm not gonna say like it's not a classic like Casino Royale. It's not a perfect film, but I think it's an underrated Bond film.
Right.
Because I think people focus too much on what it isn't and not enough on what it is. And again, as a continuation of Quantum of Solace, understanding that this is of Casino Royale, understanding this is not like old school standalone like Bond stuff.
Right.
It works much better. So that was my big surprise, really. Mm. Skyfall, I loved and still do.
Yeah, it's another great one. Just, it's like the second to Casino Royale.
Yeah, it's just epic.
That opening scene.
Oh, the opening scene is unbelievable. Again, the depth, right? The relationship with M and where that goes to, right? And then, spoiler alert, her dying. And Javier then, Bardem is...
really established Moneypenny.
Right. Well, that by the end of the movie, you kind of were brought back to like the more familiar territory. Like,
sure.
You find out that Naomi Harris's character is her name is Eve Moneypenny, and she gets a desk job, and the M is now a male, right? It's Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
So you're kind of back to the status quo, but I mean, the ride that you go on to get there, though. With M dying, and Javier Bardem as a as kind of uninspired as the villain was in Quantum of Solace, Javier Bardem is just unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean, he's always unbelievable, but like his villain in this is one of the great villains.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, and again, the motivations and the connection. I mean, the stakes in that movie are high.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, it's just that's just fantastic stuff. Then we get to Spectre. Spectre is not fantastic stuff.
No.
Now, I know there are people that hate Spectre, so I didn't hate it on rewatch. In fact, it opens pretty strong. Like that opening in Mexico,
dude,
that
is opening
great.
Scene is one of my favorite scenes.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, so good and scored beautifully.
Yeah, excellent. And the Sam Smith song, tremendous. All that stuff, great. About 45 minutes to an hour in, it starts to get boring.
Yep.
There's not a lot of action. It's a lot of exposition. And this is kind of the one time where, like, the having to have the shared, you know, the continuity hurts a little bit because they essentially, they got the rights, they won the rights to use Spectre, right, in a lawsuit. Which is why they couldn't do. So they started out teasing this organization, Quantum,
right? With that the rings and all that.
Yeah, it was going to replace Spectre because they weren't able to use Spectre. Then they win. After doing that, they wind up winning a lawsuit where they get the rights to use Spectre. So now they're kind of force feeding Spectre into the continuity, and they do like they retcon stuff where like Blofeld turns out that he's been responsible for the whole thing and all. And there's a lot of exposition and having to explain stuff because obviously it didn't happen in those movies, right? So now it's another one of those cases where like they tell us, right, rather than show us. And yes, Christoph Waltz's Blofeld is disappointing.
Yep.
You know, and not because he's Blofeld, like it's not quite like Benedict Cumberbatch telling you he's Khan, but. Yeah. But it's just he's disappointing, which is surprising because he's great.
And it makes no sense.
And no.
None of it makes any sense whatsoever.
No. It's just all shoehorned in, like fan service stuff.
I'm your brother, not brother.
That was whatever. Wacky. No, like, why did you have to throw that in
this?
There? Yeah. Like, unnecessary.
Yeah. I remember watching that in the theater, and my dad and I talked about it.
Yeah. That was... weird. Yeah. And then you got to give us, like, show us why he has the scar thing on the eye and all that stuff. It's like, oh, God. Mm-hmm. All right. But all that aside, it's not a terrible movie. You know, like, it's okay. I mean, it's, like I said, it gets boring. The love story there, not a lot of chemistry between them, not really believable. And unfortunately, that's a big part of the story. Clearly, I think the movie suffers from not having Judy Dench's M, you know, and yeah, they had to move on, but like the Ralph Fiennes stuff, like, and he's again, he's a great actor, but like his M is like whatever,
right?
You know, it's like, okay, like there's no history there, so like you went from three movies where there's this deep history, right, between Bond and M, and there's that like maternal connection, and now you're kind of restarting, but you're restarting in what was at the time believed to be Daniel Craig's last movie. Right. So, like, there's not much meat there. So, yeah, Spectre, clearly not. And I'm very happy that they decided to, that Craig decided to come back to finish the series in what he believes is the right way. So, that was my, but overall, I love the Craig continuity. I love the Daniel Craig Bond universe because it's modern and it's timeless at the same time. Like I watched, on Pluto TV, they have an all Bond channel running right now. So while I own all the Bond movies, in the interest of time, sometimes I'll just throw that channel on and watch some of the older stuff. Some of that stuff doesn't age well.
No.
It's and for a number of reasons.
No.
And
Die Another Day?
Well, yeah. So here's the thing. Forget that. We'll get into the Pierce Brosnan thing in a second. But just even like the Connery and the Roger Moore stuff especially doesn't age well because it's campy.
I've never been a big fan of Roger
Moore. But the Connery stuff, like, just look, there are things that just don't translate to modern times.
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, you know, I'm 2022, man, or 2021.
Yeah, so, like, I feel like the Craig, these movies are more timeless.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I feel like for me, even though this is not the Bond that I grew up on, this is my Bond.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the next Bond is going to be, and I don't know how they're going to handle.
Tom Holland. What are you talking about?
It's going to be Tom Holland?
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm so kidding. Oh, my God. Yeah. There was a joke going around on Twitter. I was like, hell no.
Yeah, I mean, I know people say, oh, Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill might be great. May not be bad.
No, I don't think he'd be bad at all. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. I don't know what direction they're going to go in, but so far this, I would say, is my body. The Pierce Brosnan, it's funny you mention that. The only Pierce Brosnan movie I really like is GoldenEye.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about Pierce Brosnan as Bond, and I know that he was originally going to be Bond before Timothy Dalton, but then he had to drop out.
Remington Steele.
Yeah, but for me, Pierce Brosnan's Bond, maybe it's the time, maybe it's his hair, I don't know, but he feels like a TV movie like version of Bond.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's also because I had just watched the Daniel Craig stuff, and like then you try to go watch the Pierce Brosnan stuff, and it's like, oh, this looks like a BBC production, like, of Bond.
Oh, man. GoldenEye is definitely a standout for him. I see Tomorrow Never Dies is the second one where he's got Michelle Yao, and
yes,
that's interesting. And then, but then from there,
ooh, yeah,
it just goes down.
Yes.
The World Is Not Enough, and then
Die Another Day.
And then Die Another Day is like,
yeah,
like out of this world crazy.
Yeah,
I'll never forget again sitting there watching that with my dad, and I just looked at him and go, "Gosh, this does not look good. This does not feel like Bond to me." And he's like, "This looks like bullshit." I'm like, "It does. It is total bullshit, man."
You know, and it's funny after you see, because Daniel Craig is like a badass, right?
Oh, I mean, he's
And it, you know, in his portrayal of Bond, and it's like, Timothy Dalton probably was the closest thing to a badass.
I think Timothy Dalton was ahead of his time as Bond.
Oh, he was way too ahead of his time because people were not ready for that. Because it's not that much different from Daniel Craig's Bond. I mean, story development and all that aside. but I agree with the world. Coming off of Roger Moore, that was too dramatic a shift.
Yeah, he was dark.
Yeah, he was, and they scaled back on the gadgets, and he was kind of mean, and it's
like Cold War.
Yes,
you know he. I mean, Timothy Dalton is like he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, they only had the two movies, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but
like they made such an impact, and those were the ones that I remember watching. My dad exposed me to Connery first, but Timothy Dalton was in the 80s when I was growing up, and like when those two movies dropped, like I saw those two movies, and I forgot the one, I think it's License to Kill, the one with the cellist.
Mm.
But like that one sticks out big time for me, man.
Yeah.
Just riding down a ski slope in a cello case.
Yeah, like, those are really good.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, see, the thing for me, too, is like the best Connery is the earliest Connery.
Yeah.
The problem is that stuff is so dated because it's so 60s and 70s. Like, it you try to watch Dr. No, and it's like the technology.
It's like men in space suits. It's, like, yeah. You know what I mean?
It looks like an episode of, like, Space 1999 or, like, you know, something like that. Like, it's just, it sounds dated, the music is dated, the graphics, like, they're such a product of their time that it's a little tough to get through.
It's even the way that they, you know, it's the, even the acting, like, I'm going to grab you by your shoulders and I'm going to shake you really hard.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, there's all that, too, but yeah, I mean, but yeah, yeah. So, yeah, interesting. So, anyway, I'm very excited for No Time to Die.
I'll be honest. There's one thing that makes me really nervous about No Time to Die. One thing that makes me really, really effing nervous. Rami Malek.
Well, I'm a big fan of his. Really?
I don't like him at all.
Oh, I do.
Like, at all. And he irks me a little bit when I see him on the screen.
Yeah, no, I was a big fan of Mr. Robot. I didn't see the Freddie Mercury movie.
Oh, you didn't?
No, but I'm a big fan of Mr. Robot. So I'm a fan of his. I like him. I don't know how he's going to be as a Bond villain, but
he's such a smackable face.
It's certainly not a, well, he's a villain, so maybe that works. That'll work for you then.
Nah.
No. And it's also a long, it's 2 hours and 45 minutes, so. That's a lot of ground to cover. Cary Fukunaga directing this one.
Oof.
So we'll see. I wonder if he's going to wind up being like a Martin Campbell where like he's also handed the keys to the transition.
Yeah. Oh, man. Martin Campbell.
I mean, hell, if he makes a movie, if he goes from Die Another Day to Casino Royale.
I mean, seriously, right?
It's like, wait, what? That's the same director?
He did GoldenEye too, right?
He did. Yeah, I think he did all the Brosnan movies, didn't he?
I'm not,
GoldenEye. I know that.
Yeah, I know he did GoldenEye.
Yeah, but
he did one of my all-time favorite movies,
which is
The Legend of Zorro. Master Zorro. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's one of your all-time favorite movies.
I love that movie, man.
No, it's a good movie. I'm just it's high praise.
Yeah, man, it's one of my all-time favorite movies. And what?
Yeah.
Well, he did both of them, the Mask of Zorro and... no, he did not. He only did GoldenEye.
He only did GoldenEye. All right, so then he's off the hook. Because GoldenEye's good. So that makes sense.
Yeah, he did the Mask of Zorro. The Legend of Zorro, which is a travesty.
Yeah, that didn't work out. Well, that was
and
like Casino a Royale.
Ooh, and Green Lantern.
Ugh, yeah, that's a shame, huh?
Yikes. Nope. Okay.
Hey, listen, they all can't be.
No, they
hits,
all can't be.
Right? I mean, everybody has their blips on their, you know.
Because
it's funny that, you know, John Logan, who has story credits and writing credits on Skyfall, and he was actually brought in to try to rewrite Spectre, but I think a lot of his stuff wound up on the cutting room floor. But John Logan is one of those guys who has, like, that interesting career because he was nominated for 3 Academy Awards, right, for writing Gladiator, like The Aviator and Hugo. But he also wrote Star Trek Nemesis. Yeah. So it's like, you know, that happened. I didn't get it. Like, that's more the director's fault than it was his fault. But, like, they can't all be great.
No.
You know, it happens. All right. So, yeah, so hopefully we'll... Well, I mean, I know I'll have seen Bond next week. Eventually, we'll get to talk about that. Hopefully, have some good things to say. But we do have good things to say about this last episode of What If?
Oof.
Which took this show in a direction that I was not expecting. Because I just thought we were getting these like little standalone stories. And then all of a sudden, you find out that nope. They're building a universe.
there. And or a multiverse. An Avengers.
Yeah, and they're building an Avengers team based off of these alternate reality or alternate versions of these characters. Mm-hmm. And the Watcher is not just going to be a narrator.
Right.
That just completely kind of blew me away.
They've been hinting at this, right? Where Doctor Strange, the evil Doctor Strange, becomes more galactically aware, and he becomes aware that the Watcher is watching him.
Yes,
and they have that quick little exchange. Now this thing with Ultron, kind of destroying universes and being able to jump into that realm. I don't even know what it's called, where the Watcher is, but that shit is crazy, man. And the throwdown between the two of them was crazy.
Yeah.
And the implication, I mean, just the, like, I love this multiverse idea, this concept, because it's awesome storytelling. It's a great way to just take different characters and throw them together and do some really, really cool stuff. And also, I mean, the Watchers we saw for a quick second in, I think, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So I'm glad that they're able to kind of expand on that. But yeah, I'm stoked. I'm so stoked for whatever the next episode is. And are we getting close? It feels like we're getting real close to a finale.
Yeah. I can't imagine there's more than a couple of episodes left.
But they're already signed up for season 2?
Yes.
Which is exciting.
We'll see where that goes. I wonder if they're going to tell if it'll be like a continuation of this story, or if they're going to tell like a new set of stories building to a new finale. Well, I guess it all depend on where the multiverse lies after the movies, right?
Yeah.
Start to come out. I mean, one of the exciting things about the multiverse is that it opens up a lot of creative freedom. Like, you can, like, almost anything is possible now. And, you know, this goes for both, you know, DC and Marvel. Like, almost anything is possible now. And that's really cool. Because you don't have to compartmentalize a lot of things anymore. Like, it's become very comic booky now, where it's like, you know, characters that you maybe thought weren't going to be able to coexist can coexist now. And, you know, you can bring back characters that, you know, weren't even part of this universe. And it's just, the whole thing is exciting. I mean, I don't know how it'll play for, like, general audiences, but, like, I think there's enough of a hardcore fan base now for these movies. And I think the comic book movie has been popular now for long enough to where I think there's a lot of interest, right, in this type of stuff, and more of an awareness than there may have been in past years. So maybe people are a little bit more prepared for it. But
it's literally everywhere now.
Yes.
Look, and it pulls you in. It pulls you in on a couple of different levels. Like, it's kind of funny because I forgot what episode it was, but I was watching a What If episode and my daughter happened to come and go, "Daddy, what are you watching?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm watching a show." And she was like all into it. And she's like, "I want to see more of that." And I'm like, "Oh my God, you are my child."
Yeah, well, I'm sure because the animation is cool. And
yeah, so she's into it. And then I'll tell you guys a funny story. I scared the I probably scarred my son for life. We were getting out Halloween decorations, and one year I was Thanos, and I found my mask. And as I was bringing stuff down, I decided, oh, let me put the mask on, just because my hands were full. I put it on my face. So I was walking down from the attic with the Thanos mask on. My wife is holding my son, who's just about to be 2. And he looks at me once, and he does a double take. And, like, I saw the life leave his body for a hot second. He started shaking.
Oh, no.
He went whiter than a ghost.
Oh, jeez.
And, like, lost his mind. Like, he tried to jump out of my wife's arms. And for 3 days.
Oh, boy.
After that, he would say, "Daddy, not nice. Bad guy.
What
big trouble.
Do?
Not nice. Go away." Like, for three. And every once in a while, now this was like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe, he'll say, "Daddy, not nice. Not nice. Bad guy." I'm like, "Who? Thanos?" "Yeah, Thanos, bad guy, right?" So I showed him a picture of Thanos, and then all of a sudden he wants to see more pictures of Thanos.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, guess what, kid? He's in a movie. So I put on Avengers Infinity War, and he was glued.
Really?
He loved it. But he wanted to see Thanos.
Okay, right.
And Thanos doesn't pop up very frequently in that movie.
Sure.
So anyways, it's for all ages.
it could be for different reasons. I mean, who knows what his fascination with Thanos is, but whatever.
Yeah. So anyways,
I thought you were going to tell me, like, you can't have it on anymore.
Oh,
like,
no, it's hidden.
You went in a different direction with that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, that's also true. I can't, I mentioned, "Do you want me to take him out?" And he's like, no.
Well, no, can't have, I mean, like, you can't have the movies on. Like, you clearly should never wear that outfit ever again.
No,
yeah.
I can't put the mask on again.
No.
And I have the Infinity Gauntlet, so geez, can you imagine just put those things together?
Yeah.
This kid's going to levitate.
Yeah.
In fear. But anyways, it's, they have lots of stuff on Disney Plus, like Spider-Man and Friends.
Oh,
all
yeah.
These little things, you know, like all these shows for entry points. And it's funny because we talked a lot on previous episodes about saturation, but we're only one audience,
right?
We're only one demographic. Like, yes. Saturation for like kids is a completely different, that may not even be a thing because they get obsessive over things.
Yeah. And not only that, but to me, it's not saturation. If it's not just about quality, right? It's about the context and the it's not just about quantity, rather.
Yeah.
It's
about
the context. Like, perfect example. I mean, we talked about the Star Trek stuff last week, right? And how, like, there's all this Star Trek on Paramount Plus. It's like, yeah, but they're not all for, like, they could be for different audiences. Like, there's a Star Trek animated show that's kind of more adult,
mm-hmm.
like teenage adult. Then there's going to be Star Trek Prodigy, which is for kids. Then you got the more adult, like the live action shows. If you change it up, right, and just because there's a lot of like Spider-Man, say, but if one of the shows is for little kids, and then you got a show that's for like, teens and like, young adults, and then you have a show that's for like adult, like that's not saturation. It's saturation if like it's a lot of the same thing.
Right.
Where you start to get saturation. And so I actually think it's great to broaden, to use your platforms to broaden the audience, to because you got to keep churning that over, right? You got to get kids involved. And, you're not going to get kids involved watching adult movies, right, all the time. So you got to get them intrigued. I mean, I became a superhero fan because of Batman 66 and, reruns of Batman 66 and, the Super Friends.
Same. Yeah.
That's not the deepest, darkest Batman you could ever have, but that was my gateway into this whole thing. And,
mm-hmm.
That's how kids start out,
And toys.
Toys, obviously.
Yeah, toys. Toys, big time.
Yeah.
I mean, my son is dressing up as Captain America for Halloween.
There you go.
So funny, man.
Yeah.
Him and he just saw the costume as you like this? You want these? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. You sure? You want to be a minion? Kept on pointing to the Captain America costume. You got the blonde hair and blue eyes, kid. Milkman's child.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, yeah, so it's to me it's not there's a difference between saturation and like expanding your audience and using your content. I mean, like, to me, saturation would be like, you have like a new, like, adult themed, Batman movie, and then 6 months later, you have another adult themed Batman movie, and then you spin it off into an adult themed Batman television show, and then you have an adult themed
Batman. That's kind of what's going to happen.
Well, not necessarily, because, they're going to have the Batman, right?
Adult themed.
Which is adult themed, and you're going to have some of the HBO Max shows, which will be part of that universe. But they're also going to do the Batman Caped Crusader animated show, right, which we're not really sure who that audience is going to be. But then you're going to have that Batman Cars thing
that's going to be
purely aimed at little kids, right?
Right.
So
Crypto, which is not necessarily Batman.
Right, but the idea is like, yeah, so they are going to give you a little bit of a broader scope. I mean, there's, you know, and then you have like the CW stuff, which that appeals to a particular audience, right, and is different. So yeah. It's not, yeah,
Speaking of, I got to finish Superman and Lois.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
I didn't ever finish that.
And with the different platforms that you have, like, it makes it much harder to saturate things too, right? Because mm-hmm. saturation is about, you know, concentration, right? It's about you're taking something and just saturate a point, right? It's much harder to saturate something if you're over a bigger stretch. So, like, if you have, like, streaming services and broadcast networks and movies and cable networks and your comic books, whatever, you're branching out social media, you have all these different mediums that you're using for your content, it becomes a lot harder to saturate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, you could say, well, they're saturating the marketplace. And it's like, well, maybe, but that's up to people. You know? Right. I mean, that depends on how people choose to take it. I mean, there are things that people may not even know are a thing. Yeah. You know, like, we know everything, right? But
we try to.
Well, right, you know what I mean? Like, we know when everything is out. We know when a lot of stuff's out. Like, I guarantee you that people that watch The Mandalorian that have no idea that Star Trek Visions is a thing, right? They have Star no Wars. Idea that The Clone Wars is a thing. They've never seen an episode of Rebels, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So it's true. Really all a matter of, like, you know... But yet we as hardcore fans can benefit from that because we know about all of it and
eat it up as much as we want. If it's like we said last episode, it's a buffet of different things, and if you don't like that kind of chicken, no, there's another one.
Sure.
You know? You just jump around and taste the rainbow.
Chicken of all things. He goes with the
chicken.
Chicken, that diverse chicken.
Yeah. That thing.
Million it's different ways to prepare ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to however, what if, however it ends.
I am now. I think I would be.
End on the cliffhanger. You know, it's funny because that episode that we weren't feeling, the one with Thor, I think was just meant to be a palate cleanser.
Apparently. Yeah. I mean, who knew?
I know. Because they just come in and they're like, smack that. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, like I said, I was thinking these were just going to be like these standalone things that, you know, they would have some aura, but yeah, I didn't think we were building to this.
It's a wild concept too.
Yes.
But awesome.
Yes.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it all ends.
Yes, we will. All right.
Is that it? We hit it? We hit it all?
I think so. So like we said, next week we will be back with our spoiler deep dig into Venom and all the different Easter eggs.
Hold that. One last thing.
Oh, yeah.
One last thing to talk about. Did you happen to see that trailer for Rocky IV, Rocky vs. Drago?
Oh, I did.
Oh, man. So good. Dude, you know, I really want to go. It's only going to be playing in theaters for 1 night.
I know.
It's
going to be interesting to see how that... You talk about a movie that's a product of its time.
Holy shit, but I totally want to be there. I showed it to Jess, and she's like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's get the babysitter. I'm like, what? Let's get the baby? What? Oh, my gosh. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. November 11th. And then it'll be available for mass consumption on VOD.
Yes, which probably will be the route I go, but...
Yeah.
While we're on the subject of, like, kind of nostalgia things, I will say, just to throw this out there, I actually happened to watch the first two episodes of that new Wonder Years.
Uh-huh.
And it's fantastic.
Wow, okay. Oh,
I love it. Love it.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely great. So that caught me completely off guard, but... Yeah, it's tremendous. It's on Hulu. Anyway, so I figured I'd throw that out.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Sweet.
All right. So
all right, sorry.
Next week.
On, sir.
We'll be back with Sean to get a deep dive into Venom, all the Easter eggs, all the potential things for the future, what it means for various different universes and studios and all of that stuff. And we'll, you know, maybe we'll talk a little bit about Bond and whatever. And I'm sure we'll have box office news and all that fun stuff. So that's coming up next week. But for now, you can go to thefanboygarage.com and check out these episodes. And of course, you can find us anywhere podcasts are heard. And of course, on the social medias at the Facebook, the Instagram, and the Twitter at the Fanboy Garage. And you can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AAronSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you again so much for listening to episode 149. Yikes. And I have it written right in front of me. 149 of the Fanboy Garage. We will catch you guys next week. Have a good one.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.